I will call the remote hearing of the Environment and Natural Resources Finance and Policy Committee to order. Today is February 10, 2022. This meeting is being held in accordance with Rule 10.01, which was passed and allows for remote hearings. All remote hearings are recorded and live streamed by House Public Information. The clerk will take attendance by roll.
Chair Hansen is present. Vice Chair Wasilek.
Wasilek present.
Lead Heinzman, Josh.
Heinzman present.
Representative Acomb.
Acomb present.
Representative Ackland.
Ackland present.
Representative Backer.
Backer present.
Representative Becker Finn.
Becker Finn present.
Representative Ackland.
Ackland present.
Representative Fisher.
Fisher present.
Representative Green is excused. Representative Igo is excused. Looks like Representative Jordan is just joining. We'll give her a second. Representative Keeler.
Keeler present.
Representative Lee.
Lee present.
Representative Lippert.
Lippert present.
Representative Lewick is also excused. Representative Morrison.
Morrison present.
Representative Nelson.
Nelson present.
Representative Tice.
Tice present.
And Representative Jordan.
Jordan present.
Perfect. Thank you.
You're muted.
A quorum is present. Representative Backer, would you like to move the minutes for February 8th?
Yeah, I will move the minutes, yes.
Representative Backer moves the minutes for February 8th, 2022. All those in favor say aye.
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 All those opposed, ayes have it. The minutes are approved. Members, the first bill up today, we had heard about the Metropolitan Landfill Contingency Action Trust account, Representative Richardson's bill, House File 836. During the interim in January, we had a hearing. So there was quite a bit of testimony during that time. Now, we could not take any action during the interim, but we have the bill in front of us right now. I will move that House File 836 be laid over for possible inclusion in an omnibus bill. And I will also move the DE1 amendment to get the bill in the shape the author would like. All those in favor, or any questions about the amendment? All those in favor of the amendment DE1 to put the bill in the shape the author would like, say aye.
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 Opposed, say nay. The amendment is adopted. Representative Richardson, to your bill as amended.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just as a reminder, House File 836 requires the Commissioner of Management and Budget to transfer $13.9 million from the general fund to the Metropolitan Landfill Contingency Action Trust account and the remediation fund to restore funds that were taken from the account. This will mark my third time appearing before the committee to discuss this issue, so I will be brief. But in short, because the dedicated funds were taken, it's contributing to a projected shortfall. These funds were dedicated to address threats that were either an immediate environmental threat and also thinking about long-term maintenance of closed sites. It's clear that the intent of the legislature was to restore these funds. We are at a critical point. By next fiscal year, it is projected shortfalls in the account will impact the ability to continue needed remediation, and that is a direct threat to the public health of the people living in the surrounding communities, as it could impact things like groundwater and also surface waters. Our health is impacted by where we live, work, play, and worship. No one should face worse health outcomes by virtue of their zip code. And that's exactly what will happen if we do not act. Many of us have heard the phrase, an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. We have the opportunity to be responsive, to be proactive, and to prevent and mitigate environmental threats. And that begins with the important step of restoring funding to the account with interest. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Any questions for the author? Representative Heintzman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And maybe this might come later in MPCA testimony if they're going to be talking, but I am wondering to Representative Richardson's final point on the question of interest. I'm wondering if the MILCAT fund accrued interest prior to 2016. I'm not necessarily opposed. I just want to make sure that we're on the same page here.
Representative Richardson or Mr. Kadelka?
Mr. Chair and committee members, for the record, my name is Kirk Kadelka, Assistant Commissioner with the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency. So a few years back, the legislature made a change so that the proceeds of the MILCAT fund were put in the State Board of Investments. I do not have the exact date of that at my fingertips. I will have to get back to you on that. But even prior to that, any money that would have been a MILCAT, there is an interest earned just on any dollars in the state treasury. It would have been a lower rate of return, but there would have been earnings loss from the money not being there.
Representative Heintzman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think we do need to know the timeline on how interest may or may not have accrued and may or may not need to be included in this and what the reasoning would be. The other question I would have is I would like to know if we have any information as to why the $4 million went from MILCAT to the RDA in 2005 and what it was spent on. And to that point, shouldn't that fund pay back MILCAT rather than the general fund? So that might be helpful if Mr. Kadelka could address that as well.
Mr. Kadelka.
Mr. Chair and committee members, we don't have much information on the legislature's thought on the transfer back then, other than it went to the Renewable Energy Fund. Beyond that, we weren't able to dig up much history.
Yeah, I think that MPCA could really be helpful in making sure that that information is available to legislators before we're having to see this go into some kind of final legislative process. The final question I would have, I think, is how the interest calculation was made. Did the State Board of Investment calculate that, or who would have been involved in that? And if they did, if the State Board of Investment did make that calculation, what is the timeline in which the math essentially was applied? And it does seem like most of my questions are going unanswered today, so this might be another one. If it is, I do think that MPCA needs to provide that.
Commissioner Kadelka.
Mr. Chair and committee members, I will get back to you more on the methodology, on the estimate of the number we had. Since then, I was able to get the question to Representative Heitzman's first one. It looks like in 2016 is when 8.1 million was transferred from the MILCAT and the general interest earning account that was in to the State Board of Investment. But I will need to get back to you on the second item.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Heitzman.
I think it would be great if Mr. Kadelka could give us the number. If we were able to establish that interest did accrue, I'd like to know at what rate and so on and so forth, some details as to how that determination was made. And be, I think, helpful knowing that we're applying the same expectations that were previously met, potentially, to the current math that's being used in this interest calculation.
Representative Richardson.
Thank you for allowing the bill to be heard today, and hopefully this will be included in your final omnibus.
Representative Heintzman, we will be, this bill is being laid over, so we hope to get some answers to those questions before we take further action. Thank you, Representative Richardson. Any further questions? I gotta get the exact words here. I will renew my motion that House File 836, as amended, be laid over for possible inclusion in an omnibus bill. The bill is laid over. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Next up, we have a series of PFAS bills, and I think we're going to, Representative Wasilek, we're going to take the testimony all together. Is that right?
Yeah, so the plan is, the plan that we talked about was to do, I'll give a brief intro about all three bills, and then we'll take testimony because a lot of them have testimony on all three bills. And then we'll take up each bill separately at the end to actually move the bills and have member questions on those bills.
Representative Heintzman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm hoping that if that is the case, and that's the process that we use today, that there's enough time for questions. In the previous scenarios where this has been the process, unfortunately, there's all kind of testimony and members are left being rushed to answer questions. So thank you for your assurance. I see you nodding. That's not going to be the case today.
And I think all the testifiers are on and know that they need to keep it brief and to the point, so that we can, so that they're available for questions near the end. So Representative Wasilek, why don't you start?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think a lot of us on this committee and public who are watching are probably familiar with PFAS at this point, but PFAS are per and polyfluoroalkyl substances, and they're used in a lot of consumer products, often because of their grease and water resistant properties. PFAS are extremely persistent in the environment and in human bodies, and research has found that these chemicals in breast milk, blood and urine, cow's milk, produce, fish, deer, rainwater, drinking water, and the list goes on. Studies have linked certain PFAS to kidney cancer, testicular cancer, hypertension, thyroid disease, low birth weights, and immunotoxicity in children. And as I mentioned earlier, these chemicals can build up in the human body over time. As members of this committee from both parties have noted in the past, the best way to prevent the negative health and environmental impacts of PFAS is to prevent exposure to PFAS and to prevent the chemicals from getting into the waste stream. So today we're going to be discussing three bills that seek to do just that. So first on the list is House File 2906, which would ban the use of PFAS in cosmetics. In a recent study, scientists tested more than 200 cosmetics, including concealers, foundations, eye and eyebrow products, and various lip products. According to the study, 56% of foundations and eye products, 48% of lip products, and 47% of mascaras tested were found to contain high levels of fluorine, which is an indicator of PFAS use in the products. I want to quote one of the authors of the study, a professor of physics at Notre Dame, who sort of summarizes why this is a concern. They said, these results are particularly concerning when you consider the risk of exposure to the consumer combined with the size and scale of a multi-billion dollar industry that provides these products to millions of consumers daily. There's the individual risk. These are products that are applied around the eyes and mouth with the potential for absorption through the skin or at the tear duct, as well as possible inhalation or ingestion. PFAS is a persistent chemical. When it gets into the bloodstream, it stays there and accumulates. There's also the additional risk of environmental contamination associated with the manufacture and disposal of these products, which could affect many more people. So this is one of those going upstream approaches to try and get the PFAS out of chemicals so that we're not exposed, humans aren't exposed to it either through use of these products or through the impacts on the environment. Next is House File 2907, which prohibits the use of PFAS in cookware. A lot of nonstick cookware has a special coating on it that makes it nonstick. And one of the common ones is PTFE, which stands for polytetrafluoroethylene, commonly known as Teflon. This coating is typically made using several different types of PFAS chemicals. And these coatings on these pans can release PFAS into the environment, throughout the lifespan of the product, but especially during the manufacture of the product, also through high temperature cooking and during disposal or recycling of those items. These coatings are also coming into direct contact with food, which is being cooked, and then people are eating the food. So it's another pathway that PFAS can get into the human body and into the environment. And finally, we have House File 2952, which bans PFAS in ski wax. There's recent research conducted in Maine and earlier research conducted in Sweden and Norway found high levels of various PFAS chemicals in the snow near starting lines or areas where ski events were held. Researchers have also found this PFAS contamination has gotten down to the soil as well, again, with concentrations higher near the starting lines. And we all know that PFAS is very mobile, and we know what happens with snow. Eventually, the snow will melt, the water from the snow can move through the ground and transport that PFAS through the ground into groundwater and other sources of water. So those are the three bills that were that are up today, and they're all sort of trying to take this preventative approach to limiting exposure before. Limiting exposure and then limiting the exposure to the environment that would come after these products are disposed of or come in contact with water or somehow get in the environment. So those are the three bills, and I know we have several testifiers, so I will leave it at that and we'll have testifiers.
Thank you, Vice Chair Wozwick. We will start with the testifiers. Jay Eidsness, Minnesota Center for Environmental Advocacy. Welcome. State your name for the record.
Thank you, Chair Hansen. My name is Jay Eidsness. I'm a staff attorney at Minnesota Center for Environmental Advocacy. And thank you, Representative Wozlik, for taking a proactive approach to curbing the growing spread of PFAS in our bodies and our environment. Minnesota Center for Environmental Advocacy is a nonprofit organization with almost 50 years of experience using law and science to protect Minnesota's environment. MCEA supports these bills. They take measured yet significant steps towards addressing this public and environmental health crisis. These bills protect public health. PFAS are everywhere and are found in seemingly everything. The PFAS poisoning our drinking water, making our fish unsuitable for human consumption, and costing taxpayers millions of dollars in cleanup and associated costs are found in products used by Minnesotans every day. Minnesotans applying makeup, cooking breakfast, or hitting the ski trails are probably unaware that the mascara, frying pan, or ski wax they are using contains synthetic chemicals associated with the battery of adverse health outcomes. These bills directly advance public health by reducing pathways of a direct exposure for many Minnesotans. These bills also advance environmental health. PFAS are prized for their ability to resist heat, oil, stains, grease, and water, but these qualities have serious and real consequences. For example, the PFAS in makeup that runs down the bathroom sink likely travels to a wastewater treatment facility unequipped to handle PFAS. The chemicals exit the treatment facility largely unchanged, where they may be discharged to surface waters. The Pollution Control Agency recently announced its intention to add 15 additional waters as impaired for PFOS, one of the many PFAS chemicals, which brings the total number of impaired waters in Minnesota to 26. Unless we take proactive measures on the front end before these chemicals enter the environment, more of Minnesota's prized waters and fish populations will be infected with these toxic chemicals. Importantly, these bills respond to the siren sounded by our state regulators entrusted with protecting Minnesotans and the environment from toxic chemicals. Our regulators have spoken clearly. We cannot clean our way out of the PFAS problem. Instead, as the Pollution Control Agency stated in its PFAS blueprint, the pollution must be prevented from the outset through restrictions or bans on PFAS uses. This is precisely what these bills do. In closing, I would like to remind everyone here that we can thrive without PFAS in our everyday products. For generations, Minnesotans have applied makeup, cooked food, and skied without introducing toxic and poorly understood synthetic chemicals to our bodies and the environment. The three bills championed by Representative Wozlik aim to restore common sense by eliminating these chemicals from products Minnesotans use every day. I urge everyone to heed the calls from our state scientists demanding legislative help in combating these insidious chemicals by moving these bills forward. Thank you.
Tony Quillis, Minnesota Chamber of Commerce.
Good afternoon, and thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Tony Quillis. I'm the Director of Environmental Policy at the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce, and I was going to start off by saying that my comments today apply to all the bills, but Thank you, Mr. Chairman, for doing that and saving time. So, Chairman, to go back to last year when we had the conversation about PFAS, and it's been mentioned here, there are over 4,000 chemicals in this class structure. They don't all have the same toxicological effects. Their hazard and risk profiles are different for each chemical and for each use. There's a wide range of applications to these with different properties and different characteristics. There are over 6,000 uses of PFAS. It's used in medical devices, automobiles, manufacturing, airplanes, solar panels, and cell phones are just some examples. It is known, as pointed out, it was known for its resistance to grease, oil, water, heat, and provides flexibility, strength, durability, and stability to products. Mr. Chairman, in regards to regulations of PFAS, there has been an abundance of activity going on since the legislature last met. The EPA and Director Reagan have started their PFAS roadmap. It's reviewing effluent limitations on guidelines, risk assessments, and it's going to issue disposal and guidance documents, all before 2022 and 2023. They've also started data review on 20 PFAS applications, and this also is anticipated to be out and tested by 2023. Here in Minnesota, the Pollution Control Agency has released their blueprint, and also in the state of Minnesota, there is fish tissue sampling ongoing right now. The Department of Administration amended their state contracts to deal with compostable products and PFAS. The PCA has out a draft monitoring plan and request in the regulated entities regarding PFAS in air, water, and hazardous waste. Out of the Department of Commerce, there's a chemicals and products interagency team in the Walz administration. And also last year, the legislature appropriated money and created a PFAS work group on wastewater and landfills, and I'm a member of that group. We've met three or four times already, and I've got an RFP out right now and are going to start to proceed. I think we're due with a report back to the legislature in early January. Mr. Chairman and committee members, where there are alternatives, the industry is moving to them. But not all products have alternatives, and not all of those alternatives have been tested. And so not all PFAS also have health risk limits or health-based values around them. As I said previously, they all have a wide range of properties and characteristics to them. So, Mr. Chairman, I don't think this can be solved at the local or state level or by banning individual products. And in regards to the three bills in front of you today, none, with the exception of ski wax, none of them have language dealing with de minimis, intentionally added, or what I call the manufacturer retail lag, or the sell-through. Mr. Chairman, I think that we've put the proverbial cart before the horse, letting all the activities I just mentioned take place before we start moving forward on this legislation. Mr. Chairman, I'd like to also point out in your packets, I think, and were emailed to you individually, are letters from the Minnesota Retailers Association expressing their concerns and the Personal Care Products Council. Mr. Chairman, thank you for the time to make some comments today and look forward to continuing the ongoing conversations with Representative Wasilek as this moves through the legislative process.
Thank you. Deanna White, Clean Water Action. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you so much, Chair Hansen. My name is Deanna White, and I am the State Director for Clean Water Action. I also serve as the Director of the Healthy Legacy Coalition, a health-based coalition of more than 30 organizations focused on ensuring that consumer products, especially those for children, are made without the use of toxic chemicals. I'm here today on behalf of the more than 50,000 Clean Water Action members and the members of the Healthy Legacy Coalition in support of these three bills. These bills aim to stop the non-essential uses of PFAS and a wide array of products at a time when we know more than we've ever known before about the dangers of PFAS in our bodies and in our environment. PFAS are a class of chemicals that are in need of immediate action based on their threat to human health and the widespread and costly pollution in our environment. You've already heard so much about the different health effects, so I will save time and refer you to our written testimony for more information about that. But we want to point out that eliminating these essential, non-essential uses of PFAS are identified as a key opportunity to prevent pollution in Minnesota's PFAS blueprint issued by the PCA and other agencies last year. And we hope that the committee will agree that preventing PFAS pollution should be a top priority for the legislature, both because of the health impacts and the environmental impacts, as well as the impacts, financial impacts on local communities. The bills before this committee prohibit PFAS in three different product categories: cosmetics, cookware, and ski wax. Most folks are pretty alarmed to find out how much PFAS they are exposed to on a daily basis through common products like mascara or the pan you cook your morning eggs in, or the ski wax that you apply before you go out and enjoy nature. Most folks that we talk to at the doors, on the phones, and through our outreach work are shocked to find out how common it is to have PFAS in products like these everyday products we're talking about today. When these products are used, they're exposing people to PFAS in their homes and daily lives. And when they're disposed of, PFAS will migrate out of these products into the environment, ending up in groundwater and in sewage sludge. And as a result of this, more and more communities are being forced to address PFAS contamination in their drinking water sources. The difficulty and expense in treating this contamination is a burden on communities and water systems. As a result, we know that more and more Americans are drinking water that contains some kind of PFAS. In an attempt to recover, and we're seeing that in an attempt to recover some of the massive costs of PFAS cleanup, 13 states have already sued or begun proceedings to sue the manufacturers of PFAS chemicals for contaminating water supplies and other natural resources. Local communities are being left holding the bag and footing the bill for cleaning up the mess that decades of PFAS use have made. We have a whole other conversation ahead of us about how to help communities clean up the mess and move forward, but one thing we can do is stop making the problem worse. We know that these products can be made without PFAS. There's a wide array of PFAS-free products available in all these categories. And there's a lot of brands that are already making the pledge to switch from PFAS and to find other alternatives. And while we absolutely support this change in the market, we know that we have to take legislative action to permanently close the door on the use of non-essential use of PFAS in products. We're asking you to heed the call of the EPA Administrator Michael Regan when he announced the PFAS roadmap that was mentioned earlier. He stated that every level of government, from local to state to tribal to federal, will need to exercise increased and sustained leadership to truly make progress on PFAS. Minnesota has been a national leader in prohibiting other harmful chemicals such as formaldehyde and bisphenol A in children's products. You were all brave enough to take on a ban on food packaging last year, and we ask you to continue this leadership by supporting the PFAS prevention package represented by these three bills today. Thank you so much for your time, and we appreciate your continued efforts to protect Minnesota's environment and our health.
Thank you. Sean Swearingen, American Chemistry Council. Welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Sean Swearingen, and within the American Chemistry Council, I am the director for the Alliance for Polymer Chemistry Stewardship. Like the other witnesses, I'd like my testimony to be considered for each of the following three House files at the same time: 2906, 2907, and 2952. The mission of ATCS is to promote the responsible production, use, and management of fluorotelomer-based products, while also advocating for sound science and risk-based approach to regulation. As written, the measures, the definition of PFAS is overly broad and does not focus on the applications of intent of the measures. This is a structural definition. Even regulatory, European regulatory agencies like OECD classify as not appropriate for regulatory enforcement. The broad definition of PFAS contained in the three bills will have widespread unintended consequences. And as written, the definition includes hundreds, if not thousands, of different chemistries. This does not consider the risk assessments, hazards, and solubility of these thousands of different chemistries either, as it contains different chemistry classes. The definition should focus on specific chemistries of concern, using clear and concise language. At the federal level, as previously mentioned, Environmental Protection Agency launched their PFAS roadmap in an interagency effort at the end of 2021 that focuses on the regulation and monitoring of the chemistry. This is in addition to their own testing strategy and the agency's PFAS action plan. As I mentioned earlier, Minnesota, I believe, has their own draft monitoring plan as well. I'd like to speak to the alternatives process that these measures imply. While there are alternatives for some applications, not all have an applicable alternative, and in some cases, not all alternatives have been thoroughly vetted, analyzed, and reviewed by the agencies. Washington State's Department of Ecology is going through this exact process in their alternatives assessment and could not find applicable alternatives in performance and safety, in several cases, just in food packaging. I look forward to working with the committee and the bill sponsors on these three House files.
Thank you. Lori Olinger, Sierra Club. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Chair Hansen and committee members. My name is Lori Olinger, and I'm with the Sierra Club, representing 80,000 members in Minnesota. And I'm testifying in support of the three bills to ban PFAS in ski wax, cosmetics, and cookware. Because they are very persistent and toxic, PFAS chemicals should only be used for critical applications, and these three do not fall into that category. Fluorinated ski wax may give ski racers an edge, but the wax flakes off and it ends up contaminating snow and soil. Handling fluorinated ski wax and breathing fumes as you apply it to your skis is also a hazard, especially for wax technicians. Some manufacturers like Swix no longer make fluorinated ski waxes, and an increasing number of ski associations and races like the Birkebeiner don't allow them now, which is good, but without a ban, fluorinated ski wax will continue to be produced and used. Makeup is a surprising hotspot for PFAS. It's included to give foundation a smooth feel and to make longer-lasting lipstick, but people use lipstick every day, all day, and it soaks into their skin and lips. A 2021 cosmetic study found PFAS in more than half of the products, and in 88%, the label didn't disclose it. Most people are not aware that PFAS is in cosmetics, and even if they are, it's extremely difficult to avoid. Cookware was one of the first uses for PFAS and continues to be a big market. Most nonstick cookware is treated with PTFE, also known as Teflon. Labels are often misleading. Even products labeled PFOA-free had Teflon. For some items like small appliances, there are no options other than nonstick. The American Cancer Society noted a risk from breathing fumes from overheating heated Teflon-coated pans. I think of that whenever I use my nonstick waffle iron and smell the chemicals as it heats. For all of these products, non-fluorinated options are or could be available. I ask that you support these three bills to protect our health and the environment. Thank you.
Thank you. John Keene, Association of Home Appliance Manufacturers. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Chair Hansen, members of the committee. My name is John Keene, the Association of Home Appliance Manufacturers, also known as AHAM. And we're here in opposition to House File 2907. AHAM members produce hundreds of millions of products each year. They design and build products of the highest levels of quality and safety. This legislation would specifically prohibit the sale of cookware products, which PFAS substances are present and measurable. Among the issues of this legislation is the broad group of PFAS substances, which number in the thousands, with many of them very different properties, as mentioned before. The broad grouping of PFAS is also inappropriate, as other government agencies are currently doing chemical-specific work, as mentioned before as well. Just last year, EPA issued a notice of proposed rule to require certain entities that manufacture these chemical substances in any year since 2011 to report their use of PFAS uses. And with that, we urge Minnesota to allow these government agencies to complete their work before acting. And with that, I strongly urge you to oppose House File 2907. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Christopher Finarelli, Household and Commercial Products Association. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Madam Vice Chair. Speaking to House File 2906 relative to cosmetics today, we have concerns that the bill leans on a broad definition of PFAS and brings with it unintended consequences. Some of the points I'd like to make were underscored by the representative from the chamber, so I'd like to drill down on a specific example to kind of paint a picture for the committee. According to the committee overview, PFAS do not break down in the environment and can accumulate over time. There is evidence that the exposure to PFAS can lead to adverse human health effects. However, if you take something like an aerosol propellant, a gas that helps deliver a product from a container, in particular what are known as HFOs, these are safe for human health and the environment throughout their complete life cycle. They are not persistent, they are not bioaccumulative, and they are not toxic. This technology has the benefit of minimum global warming potential, among other benefits. However, this HFO technology would be caught up in the broad definition of PFAS. So this is one unintended consequence of applying such a broad definition, even in a single category like cosmetics. PFAS are not one thing. They're thousands of different compounds with varying physical and chemical attributes. Or if you take the packaging, for example, many companies are making commitments to use more recycled content in their products. However, it is unclear how anyone can confirm that all recycled material is completely free from any detectable PFAS. So in this case, we would be discouraging the use of recycled plastics in products. So we urge the committee to take a really close look at the complex chemistry around this issue on this proposal and others in the future. Thank you for your time.
And Mr. Finarelli, if you could just state your name for the record.
Sorry about that. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Christopher Finarelli with the Household and Commercial Products Association.
Thank you. Members, that is it for the testimony. We have over 50 minutes left for questions and action on these bills. Representative Heinzman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have lots of questions. I think I will start with one that's kind of on the top of my mind that I'd like to have addressed as quickly as possible. Wozlik, I'm looking at 2906 and line 1.18. The commissioner of the Pollution Control Agency may enforce this section under sections 115.071 and 116.072. Could you walk the committee through what enforcement that is describing and what any company or mom and pop or anybody who would be found to have distributed or sold or offered for sale these products? And, you know, a simple mistake quite often leads to fines and charges and so on and so forth. So I'd like to know exactly what Minnesota businesses might be facing if your bill became law.
Vice Chair Wozlik.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I am looking at 115.071, which was referred to in 2906. And there's a number of pieces to this. So it's civil penalties, criminal penalties, there's actions to compel performance. So it's a whole number of different ways that this would be enforced by the agency.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Could Representative Wozlik, could you tell us what civil penalties and fines may be incurred? Are we talking about $10? Are we talking about jail time? Are we talking about what other specific penalties? Do you have an idea how much of a fine could be incurred, and if it, is it a penalty per item? I'm thinking of, you know, the resort shop up on a lake, for example, in my district. If they have products available to try to help guests out, are they looking at a significant cost or potentially criminal penalties under your bill? Is that what I'm hearing?
So in the, thank you, Mr. Chair. In the past, when I've had discussions with MPCA, when we did the food packaging bill, for example, there was the, you know, the MPCA, there would be information put out about the ban so that, you know, companies, businesses could prepare for this to come through. And then there would be conversations. The first step wouldn't be like, here's a $10 million fine. It would be a conversation about the ban and what, and the, you know, what could happen if if these weren't followed. And from my understanding, I believe in conversations about food packaging, I think it was not by item. I think it was by violation. So like the first violation, there would be, it would likely be a conversation. The second one would be whatever the next step would be. And I'm certainly open if putting more specificity around the violations into the bill is helpful. We could certainly do that. I think we've done that in the past to make it more clear to especially those who are selling a product who are not necessarily manufacturing it, but who are selling that product or using that product. So certainly can put some clarifying language in there so it's clear who is responsible for what and what those penalties might be.
Representative Heisman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Boswellick, either you don't know the answer to the question and what the specific fines are, or you don't want to share. So it sounds like I have to move on from that because you're not going to tell us. And to be clear, anybody that's watching the committee today, there are very specific penalties and charges that come along with those sections of statute. And they maybe should look them up the same as I had to, because Representative Boswellick will tell us. I would like to know.
Just a moment, if we could. Representative Heinzman, delving almost into intent there in terms of accusing the vice chair of not wanting to tell you. And I think we do have nonpartisan staff here who may have an answer for us, so it's clear on the record. Mr. Eliff.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm looking at section 115.071, which is one of the enforcement sections that's mentioned in the bill. And under civil penalties, it mentions a maximum, not more than $10,000 per day of violation, except that the violation relates to hazardous waste, it's more, but this is not considered hazardous waste under our state definitions. So we're talking about $10,000 per day of violation. It also says at the discretion of the court, the defendant could be required to pay for, compensate the state for the value of cleanup, and also any just compensation for any loss or destruction to wildlife, fish, or other aquatic life, and other actual damages to the state caused by these pollutants. Also in section 116.072 allows the PCA to impose administrative penalties on violators, which have a maximum of $20,000 for violations.
And Mr. Eliff, just to clarify, that's an up to amount in both the administrative and the civil penalty. It's not.
Yes, those are both maximums.
Representative Heinzman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I really appreciate the information being put on the record today, Mr. Chair. So a resorter who hasn't caught a product sitting on their shelf could potentially be looking at a $10,000 fine per day. I hope people are paying attention to what is being legislation. The other question I had was,
I lost you a little bit there. It was kind of mumbled. Can you restate that?
I will repeat my statement. I am wondering, since we have heard these bills on a number of occasions through the last few years, what is the current status, if you don't mind me asking, Representative Wozelik, in the other body? Is it happening this time around? Do we have movement on this, or what's happened?
Representative Wozelik.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We are working on getting Senate authors to these bills right now, so they will have companion bills in the Senate. And then once we have all those figured out, we'll be having further conversations with Senate authors on potential movement in that body.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Heinzman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate that update, Representative Wozelik. It sounds like nothing is happening in the other body as well again. In House File 2907, if we could move on, I did have a question about something, not to nitpick, Mr. Chair, but I'm wondering if I'm right, is on this cookware bill, I don't believe any other state in the country has moved this kind of legislation forward. This would be quite different. Even California, if I'm reading the information correctly that I've seen, only has a labeling requirement, which quite often they're pretty aggressive in their stance on some of these issues. Am I seeing that correctly, that we would be the only state in the entire country to outright ban some of these products? And I'm wondering if this really makes sense. And testimony that we've heard over the last half an hour to 45 minutes, even those supporting this legislation, have pointed out that there are thousands of products, and here we are identifying three. Is this really the right approach for Minnesota to create a patchwork of legislation moving through a process that doesn't get at the literally thousands of products that are potentially affected or carrying these chemicals? I'm trying to understand. It seems as though we're definitely an outlier in our approach, and I'm wondering, does this really make sense? And if I'm hearing incorrectly, and there's other states that are working on this or have already passed legislation, and I'm wrong, I'd like to know if the bill author could explain why this approach, and then also confirm for me if we really are the only state that's looking at this particular issue in 2907 different as opposed to legislation versus a warning.
Representative Heinzman, there was a lot there. Just to note, you know, that as the People's House.
I can answer, Mr. Chair.
I was going to answer just a little bit about, as the People's House, you know, we're hearing bills, and we will do our work, and the Senate is the Senate. Representative Wozniak.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You are wrong, Representative Heinzman. Maine has actually banned all non-essential uses of PFAS. They just did that recently, and that ban goes into effect in 2030, and that does include things like cookware with these coatings on it. And that was actually an approach that I preferred to take in our state, but I knew that we didn't have the support in the Republican-controlled Senate to actually get that done, despite the fact that we know these chemicals are harmful and that they're in our environment and they're expensive to clean up. We tried to take this approach to sort of tackle some of the low-hanging fruit, knowing that we didn't have the support in the other body to be able to pass a more comprehensive bill, which I would have preferred.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Heinzman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. That really helps for who knows Wozniak, because I think that there's a misunderstanding in that you are positioning Republicans as the obstacle, when in fact, I think this needs to be addressed at a different level. Having a patchwork of law all over the United States, every state passing their list of products that fall into a category that they find to be objectionable or not, seems to be a recipe for disaster, quite honestly, for manufacturers. And we've already seen all kinds of problems in the supply chain. These kinds of bills that Democrats come up with, it seems, would only exacerbate those kinds of problems. So it's not that there's any opposition necessarily to trying to work on this issue, because we all recognize that PFAS is a dangerous problem. These chemicals, no question, need to be more closely looked at. And it has been probably decades in the making, to the point we're finally looking at them more closely. And I've been talking about this issue, frankly, since I came to the legislature. So it's not just Democrats that care about this issue. Republicans recognize this, and we've been talking about, I have at least, for a very long time, challenging our law here in Minnesota. And I can go on for quite a while, but in the interest of time, I hope to correct the record and help people better understand. This is, I think, something that we could work on in a bipartisan way. But this approach, as we've heard in testimony today, targeting retailers as the enemy and potentially levying fines of over $10,000 if you cumulatively have many days of violations, that doesn't seem to be the answer, in my opinion. You know, and I hope that clarification helps and we could work together on this, because right now it seems like, Representative Wozniak, you're trying to force this issue all on your own. You need help, and we want to help, and I'm offering that. But this approach, I don't think, is going to move forward very well through a process in a bipartisan way.
Representative Wozniak.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, Representative Heintzman, I look forward to your support of these bills, moving them forward, since you say there's bipartisan support. I would hope you would support these bills. I will say that I don't think it's necessarily Republican opposition. I think it's certain industries that get a hold of, have the ear of Republicans, some Republicans on this issue, and keep them from making progress on it. So I'm happy to work with whoever wants to work with me. Unfortunately, we haven't had a lot of Republican senators interested in being chief authors on this bill. For what reasons, I don't know. They won't tell me, but I look forward to working with, at least in the House, Republicans to get some things passed and to move forward on this issue.
Representative Heintzman, I see Representative Backer and Representative Tice have questions. Do you want to respond or should I go to them?
No, I think that we have covered the material fairly well. Thank you for the opportunity, Mr. Chair.
Representative Backer.
Yeah, thank you, Chair. What I want to share with is, I have to agree with Representative Heintzman. As a retailer, we have so many things that we have to handle. And if we're really looking to solve this problem, and I think I'm hearing from several people that there are those concerns, we have to take more of a natural approach, because a retailer in Browns Valley, Minnesota, who sells stuff, which we sell houseware items, have to be focused and be the police and stuff like that. We're running 120 miles per hour every day. So what I hear is, on our side of the aisle, we're not against the idea, because we, at the end of the day, we want everybody to be safe. But the challenge is how we're going to police this. As a retail, selling to the retail public, there's no way our small staff could keep up with this. We have thousands of items in the store and stuff like that. So that it's more of a comment, Chair, that to tweak this, to make this better, it would be a lot better on a national approach instead of a state by state, because people just go over to South Dakota and get the same stuff, then they don't come and shop at the retail stores in Minnesota. So that's my comment.
Representative Wasowick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And thank you, Representative Backer, for the comment there. I think, if the retailers are going to have difficulty, then I would say the retailers should pressure the manufacturers of the products they carry in their stores to not have these chemicals in their products, because we know they're harmful. I would also say to the points of waiting on the feds are slow on everything. I'm not going to wait on the feds. I'm not going to wait on the feds when my constituents have PFAS that is poisoning them in their drinking water in my district. I'm not going to wait on the feds for that. There's no need to wait on the feds for that. We can move forward with this now. We know that other states are moving forward with these things. As I mentioned, Maine has a ban on all non-essential PFAS uses, which tells me that they're not going to have no products in Maine. It's just going to be, they're going to have a process for getting rid of these chemicals. And if Maine is doing it, that means that the manufacturers and retailers who are having products made and sold in Maine are going to have to do that, and there's no reason why they can't also do it in Minnesota.
Representative Backer. Okay, I go to Representative Tice.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
I'm sorry, it took me a while to hit mute. Again, the retailers will not have the time or the opportunity to do this stuff. They're paying bills, they're cleaning the store, they're handling customer service. On paper, it seems reasonable to do it that way, practical. Retailers are not in a position. I know you and I will professionally disagree, but I'm a retailer. I do this every day. So for what's that worth, that's my 2 cents. I do appreciate that. I'll let to go to Representative Tice.
Thank you, Representative Backer. Representative Tice, sorry about that. I'm pushing a little further. Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to probably restate what I thought I heard Representative Heintzman say is not necessarily that we support these bills as they are written. We support the idea that this is definitely something we need to watch. But when I look today to see about research regarding PFAS, what I'm seeing is that, so one of the top takeaways that I found was New Scientific Review finds insufficient data to draw accurate conclusion about the association of PFAS with any specific diseases. The research is ongoing and it's out there, but what I see most of all is that it's not there yet to make these kinds of bills and decisions. I agree that there could be a lot of things, but I'll tell you what, with this whole COVID situation happening, I have a lot of issues with some of the vaccinations that we were told were not going to be harmful, and they are. And I've experienced some of that. So I don't want to rush into something and start putting fines and different things out there to our folks when we don't even have really supportive data in saying that this is exactly where we're at. I believe, as Representative Heintzman said, we need to be very on top of a lot of these things, but I don't believe that your bill is appropriate at this time when I'm not finding a whole lot of evidence when I start Googling and when I start looking that absolutely says this is exactly what it does. And I do know as a consumer and wearing cosmetics, I pay attention to what I use, and so do a lot of other folks. And when you say people that make products that are changing, I believe they have been. I don't think we've been having a discussion about PFAS for a long time. I remember hearing issues about Teflon for a very long time. And I don't think we just stay stuck in the same place. I believe that as we know better, we do better. And for that reason, I do agree with Representative Heintzman. This is something that we are very watchful of, that we are taking time to look at and see what data is out there. But I don't believe that already putting fines and doing all these different things for folks is really an appropriate way to do it. So with that, I'm not going to be supportive. I'm supportive of the issue. I'm not supportive of the bills. Thank you.
Representative Wasilek.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm just really confused because we've been having conversations about, and Representative Heintzman has said this in committee, that we have to work upstream. And then when we bring bills that work upstream to prevent PFAS from getting into people's bodies and into the environment, the answer is no. So I guess I'm more than willing to work with people if the shape of the bills isn't right, but to say that that it's important and we have to prevent it from getting into people's bodies in the environment, and then to do the exact opposite and not support the bills moving forward so we can do that, doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me. So like I said, happy to work on language. If there's specific language or penalties or fines that are too big, we did that with PFAS and food packaging, happy to continue the conversation. But if we're actually serious about preventing PFAS from getting in the waste stream and to human bodies, we have to prevent it. And that means we have to not have it in products that are ending up in our bodies, on our bodies and in the environment through whatever way they get there.
Again, I just want to reiterate that I don't believe that the science is out there yet. I don't believe that we've got the data that absolutely says we're on the right path with the bills. So, again, I don't know how you don't understand that part of it. I think it's very simple. Thank you.
Representative Jordan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And thank you, Vice Chair Wasilek, for bringing these bills forward. I think we've heard a lot about the effects that this would, that we've heard a lot from retailers today. And in fact, we've heard from a number of their associations. And so if individual retailers are concerned about their ability to provide cosmetics or ski wax or cookware, they can talk with their associations to put pressure on their manufacturers. But we're here to represent the people. And the people don't have associations like that. They have the House of Representatives, and it is our job to keep them safe from dangerous chemicals like PFAS. I think earlier Ms. Winter said that we'd heard a lot about the health effects of PFAS, but it sounds like there's some confusion about the science around PFAS and what that does to the human body. And I can say, as someone who eats food that I cook and as someone who wears mascara, there isn't a label that informs me that there might be, I might be putting carcinogens in my body through my eyes or my mouth or through the food that I'm eating. So I'm wondering if Ms. Winter could talk a little bit more about the health impacts that PFAS has and how PFAS actually gets into our waterways and what the cost is to local governments who are now in charge of cleaning up the PFAS that gets into our water from these personal products that we have to buy and we have no idea have this PFAS in them.
Ms. White.
Yeah, thank you, Chair Hansen. I'll do my best. I would say that there is quite a bit of science available that links the presence of PFAS to various illnesses. As with most chemical exposures, it is incredibly difficult to say that because you had a rubber duck when you were 3, you now have learning disabilities when you're 8. But there are overwhelming studies and broad scientific consensus that there are significant health impacts from PFAS. In terms of how we get exposed, there's multiple pathways. Obviously, applying products to your body and ingesting them that contain PFAS will put it directly into your body, but there's other ways that it gets into the environment as well. So some of it is directly through waste disposal. When you get rid of your pan, your nonstick pan, it'll end up in a landfill, most likely. Very few, if any, of those are able to be recycled. So it ends up in a landfill. As we know from many, many years of dealing with landfills, things that end up in a landfill don't necessarily stay in the landfill. So the PFAS will migrate out of the products, whether it's ski wax on the snow, whether it's a pan in the landfill, whether it's cosmetics that are being washed down the drain in the shower or the sink. Those are all pathways for it to get into the environment. And what we've seen is that once it's in the environment, it is very, very difficult, and some would say impossible, to really truly get it out. And so that's why this upstream approach has been one that has been broadly supported by community leaders as well as individuals to try and stop the problem from getting worse before it becomes an even bigger burden on taxpayers. So I hope that answered your question. I will just disclaimer, I'm not a scientist, but that's my understanding.
Representative Jordan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Ms. White, for that answer. You talked a little bit about how these are forever chemicals, and they're very difficult to impossible to remove from our natural environment. Can you talk about does anyone here know about some of the costs that our government has had to put into cleaning up these chemicals from these products in our waterways?
Ms. White?
I apologize. I don't have those facts at my fingertips. I'm happy to try and get them for you. I know that there's been some examples, particularly from the East Metro, around cleanup costs, and it has been very significant, whether it's individual homeowners having to get expensive reverse osmosis systems or whether drinking water systems have had to do complete overhauls of their drinking water systems. And I know there's been some estimates in terms of like the closed landfills and the expense involved with cleaning up the effluent from there, as well as we've heard, I believe last year with the food packaging bill, there were a number of testifiers from the drinking water systems about the expense that they were expecting or projecting for having to address the problem in the water treatment plants. But I don't have hard numbers off the top of my head, but I will absolutely try to get them for you unless someone else on the meeting has them handy.
Do any of the other testifiers have ballpark numbers for that? Or could they get them for the committee?
Mr. Chair, I could probably reach out to the League of Minnesota Cities on that one and see if they have any numbers. I've worked with Craig Johnson from League of Minnesota Cities on PFAS stuff, so I can reach out and see if we can get some numbers to share with the committee.
Representative Jordan.
Mr. Chair.
Let's go to Representative Jordan for her.
Mr. Chair, Representative Jordan asked if anybody had any information on that. I would.
Okay, Representative Einsman.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. If MPCA wanted to speak to it, I would defer. But I think that we have covered this issue on a number of other occasions, and very specifically, how does government handle, at least the state of Minnesota and the regulatory process, handle PFAS in municipal systems? And I can tell you, the solution of Minnesota, as per current MPCA rules, is dilution and discharge. That is ultimately what is being done in Minnesota, and quite often that discharge is directly into the Mississippi. So the cost is probably outside of the scope of our ability to calculate because we're simply sending it downstream. In most cases, that's what's happening in Minnesota.
Representative Jordan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Heintzman, for that. That's kind of my point. I think it's a huge problem that we're discharging these chemicals and trying to dilute them downstream. You know, my constituents live downstream from a number of communities in Minnesota, and beyond that, there are millions and millions of Americans and people worldwide who live downstream from Minnesota. It's imperative that we're preventing these chemicals from actually entering our waterways. If the cost is incalculable or beyond the scope of this committee, that's something that we can think of. But what is within the scope of this committee is the ability to ban these chemicals from entering our ecosystem in the first place. And I really want to thank Representative Wasilik for her inspiring leadership that has put us on this path. Thank you.
Representative Fisher.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Appreciate the opportunity. I want to say thank you, Representative Wasilek, for bringing the bill forward. And one of the things I was hearing some people talk a little bit about is the science out there, where it seems like some people are trying to dispute it. And I would remind them that if PFAS wasn't a concern, why does most of the East Metro having to find new sources and treat all their water because of PFAS? And that PFAS is out there and continually to accumulate. It is something that we need to get a handle on and get it out of our system as quickly as possible. And that means taking the approach that Representative Wasilek has here, is making sure that we're working upstream, is making sure that the people who are selling are putting the pressure on the people who are doing the distributing of it and the people who are creating it. I think one of the important things that we need to keep in mind is that it's not wrong to be an outlier. I think Representative Wasilek has proved that in the past when we dealt with TCE. We were the first state in the country to take that, and the feds have been trying to address it for years. So I think it's important that we have a true leader like Representative Wasilek here to push the issue, because without somebody pushing the issue, nothing ends up getting done. And we'll continue to have contamination out there. And I think it's one of the issues that when we look at what is going to be coming at us down the road for the legacy of this chemical, we're going to wish that we would have taken action sooner than we have now. So Representative Wasilek, I want to say thank you for the work that you're doing on this, and it's important that we continue to push these bills forward.
Representative Wasilek.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah, and I just want to echo that piece about what Representative Fisher said about the feds and being the first one. Someone has to be the first, and I don't know why Minnesota can't be the first to say these toxic chemicals, and we wouldn't be the first. Maine's already done it, right? They actually, as I said earlier, they banned all non-essential uses of PFAS, and that goes into effect, I believe, in 2030. So they're ahead of us, and we're just trying to pick up bits and pieces that we think we can pass in a divided legislature. Like I said earlier, if I could do the whole thing, I would do the whole thing, but I don't think that has a chance. So we're here, we're trying to do piece by piece, and these pieces in particular, the cosmetics and the cookware in particular, are things that are very intimately used, right? It's things that we're cooking our food on and eating our food off of, and also things that we're putting on our faces and bodies. And so that's part of the approach, was to say, what are these things that are really prevalent and that are very close to use in terms of how they're getting into our bodies and the environment with ski wax. Minnesota is a big, there's lots of skiers in Minnesota, lots of folks use ski wax, and we know that it's, we're seeing it show up in various places all across the state. And one of the ways it gets there is through water. And so we want to make sure that, you know, as I said, I would have loved to have taken a comprehensive approach, but that's just not something we thought was feasible this year.
Representative Ackland.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I have questions, particularly regarding the cosmetic piece of these legislative suggestions. So I just need a little bit of clarification, if I could. So I heard some testimony, I think, from Mr. Quillis that within this category of PFAS or within these chemicals, there's like maybe 1,000. So my question is on these cosmetics. So is there a clear understanding of the exact chemical that's being prohibited in these cosmetics? And I guess I'm leading to the question is, by changing this just slightly, are we moving out of the PFAS into something else that might be similar, but more toxic or less toxic? I'm not sure. Because what I'm concerned about is when I look on the shelves of all the cosmetics, most of them are not, well, many may be manufactured here in the United States. Many are manufactured overseas. And so when I think about this bill going into effect in just a year and a half, I'm thinking of all these manufacturers around the world, basically, that how that would affect what's on our shelves here in Minnesota. It seems to me like most of the shelves would be empty with such a fast implementation of this bill. So my question sort of comes back to when we've got these hundreds of products with many manufacturers, this time frame seems short to me to make this switch into still having products available that, you know, people would have a choice. So that's sort of a long-winded question, if you can please answer. Thank you.
Representative Wasilewicz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Eklund. I will try. If I miss anything, let me know, and I can add some more in. So in terms of the definition, this is a common definition of PFAS. It's used across a lot of the legislation that is done in this area. And so that it is very inclusive. But one of the things that upsets me about PFAS is that there are so many chemicals. But the other piece is that we've let that happen, and we haven't put any requirements on companies that they actually produce a PFAS that's safer. What we've actually found when we've tested the newer PFAS chemicals is that they're not any safer than the old PFAS chemicals. And in fact, sometimes they are worse in that they are more likely to, I think it's, I don't know what the exact wording is, but move with water. So they're more likely to do that, which would be a big concern, particularly for the environment. So in terms of the definition, that's part of the reason why we have that broad definition, is because these, as they do more research on these new PFAS chemicals, they're finding that they're not necessarily any better, or they're worse in some ways than the old PFAS chemicals, two of which have been largely phased out because of the negative effects on the health and environment. In terms of the deadline, that's, you know, we have that conversation every time we ban a toxic chemical, and I'm more than willing to have conversations about moving that deadline. We have to start somewhere. We have to start with some sort of date. And so I'm more than willing to continue the conversation and extend that deadline. And even as Mr. Quillis mentioned, you know, there's a sale thing where, like, using up a product. Again, we've done that in past bills. I'm more than happy to do that. The end goal here is to really reduce the PFAS that's coming into the environment and coming into the waste stream and coming into our bodies. And so if that means that there's a slightly different way of doing it, great. Let's do it. Let's get it done. But I think, you know, the faster we can do it, the better. But we also want to make it something that's actually achievable for folks in Minnesota.
Representative Lee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and members. Just wanted to get to the point and provide you a perspective of, you know, the cost for us with regards to PFAS and other emerging contaminants. You know, this morning in the Capital Investment Committee, we heard about the impact of PFAS and other contaminants, and how is that going to impact our water infrastructure here in the state of Minnesota. You know, next year alone, and year or, you know, fiscal year 2022, we're going to stand to receive just a little bit over $13 million in the state of Minnesota from the feds, from the Investment and Jobs Act, just to address this. And then overall, over the next, you know, 5 years, the cost of the state, or, you know, that we have received, at least, to address some of these issues is over $75.5 million. And so, you know, that is just to provide a perspective, you know, as we travel in the Capital Investment Committee throughout the entire state to listen and hear about, you know, water infrastructure requests, know that, you know, there is a great need out there, and we are going to get funds from the feds to address this. And I think that, you know, what Representative Wasilewicz is bringing today with regards to the proposal to limit the amount that we have into our system is a great start, and just want to say thank you for that.
Representative Wasilewicz.
I'm all comments, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Members, we have about 15 minutes left. I would like to start to take action on these. We will take we have some author's amendments to get the bill in the shape, but I want to take each bill as it is, in normal order. So Representative Wasilewicz, would you move that House File 2906 be recommended to be re-referred to the Commerce, Finance, and Policy Committee?
Yes, Mr. Chair. I will move that House File 2906 be recommended to be re-referred to the Commerce, Finance, and Policy Committee.
Are there any additional questions from members to House File 2906? Any closing comments, Representative Wasilewicz?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is a good bill. It will help prevent exposure to PFAS through the use of products that come into close contact with us and our bodies. And this is one step in our prevention first approach. And I encourage members to support the bill and help us move towards preventing the PFAS from continuing to get into the environment and our bodies. Thank you.
Representative Wasilewicz renews her motion that House File 2906 be recommended to be re-referred to the Commerce, Finance, and Policy Committee. The clerk will take the roll.
Chair Hansen?
Aye.
Vice Chair Wasowick?
Aye.
Lead Heinzman? Lead Heinzman?
No.
Representative Acomb?
Aye.
Representative Ackland?
Aye.
Representative Backer?
No.
Representative Becker Finn?
Aye.
Representative Ackland?
Aye.
Representative Fisher?
Fisher, aye.
Representative Green, excused. Representative Igo, excused. Representative Jordan?
Jordan, aye.
Representative Keeler?
Keeler, aye.
Representative Lee?
Lee, aye.
Representative Lippert?
Lippert, aye.
Representative Lewick, excused. Representative Morrison?
Morrison, aye.
Representative Nelson? Representative
Nelson,
aye. Representative Tice?
No.
All right. The vote is 13 aye, 3 nay, 3 excused.
The motion prevails. House File 2907. Representative Wasowick, would you move that House File 2907 be recommended to be re-referred to the Commerce, Finance, and Policy Committee?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I will move that House File 2907 be recommended to be re-referred to Commerce, Finance, and Policy Committee.
And Representative Wasowick, you have an author's amendment. Would you move the A1 amendment and briefly explain?
Yep, I will move the A1 amendment, and this amendment is really simple. It just added manufacturer to the list of prohibited activities, which was in the other two bills. It just got missed when we drafted this one, so it just adds that simple word to the list of prohibited activities.
Representative Wasowick moves the A1 amendment to get the bill in the shape she would like. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Ayes have it. The A1 amendment is adopted. Questions from members on 2907 as amended? Any further discussion on 2907 as amended? Representative Wasowick, any closing comments?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is more to the all three bills, but specifically this one and others. We've heard industry say that the costs of passing legislation banning PFAS are too high, but we know who really foots the bill. It's the Minnesotans who are drinking water that's been poisoned by these chemicals. It's the consumers who may unknowingly expose themselves or their kids to these chemicals, and it's the taxpayers who must pay to clean up these chemicals. So this is one, again, another effort to try and reduce, prevent the PFAS from getting into the environment and humans' bodies. And I would appreciate support on this bill because we're the ones who are actually dealing with the costs, and they are too high for Minnesotans and consumers.
Representative Wasowick renews her motion that House File 2907, as amended, be recommended to be re-referred to the Commerce, Finance, and Policy Committee. The clerk will take the roll.
Chair Hansen?
Aye.
Vice Chair Wasowick?
Aye.
Lead Heinzman?
No.
Representative Acomb?
Aye.
Representative Ackland?
Aye.
Representative Backer?
No.
Representative Becker Finn?
Aye.
Representative Ackland?
Aye.
Representative Fisher?
Fisher, aye.
Representative Green, excused. Representative Igo, excused. Representative Jordan?
Jordan, aye.
Representative Keeler?
Keeler, aye.
Representative Lee?
Lee, aye.
Representative Lippert?
Lippert, aye.
Representative Lewick, excused. Representative Morrison?
Morrison, aye.
Representative Nelson?
Nelson, no.
Representative Tice?
No.
The vote is 12 aye, 4 nay, 3 excused.
You're muted.
The motion prevails. Representative Wasluck, would you move that House File 2952 be recommended to be re-referred to the Commerce, Finance, and Policy Committee?
Yes, Mr. Chair. I will move that House File 2952 be recommended to be re-referred to the Commerce, Finance, and Policy Committee.
Representative Wasluck also has an author's amendment. Representative Wasluck, would you move the DE2 amendment and briefly explain?
Yep, I will move the DE2 amendment. This amendment essentially standardizes the definitions and the language across the bills. So this was another one where there were a few things that needed to be tweaked, and this brought the definitions specifically of PFAS and some of the other language into a standard form across the bills.
Representative Wasluck moves the D2 amendment to get the bill in the shape she would like. Any questions? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, nay. The ayes have it. The amendment is adopted. Questions from members to the bill as amended? Further discussion on the bill? Representative Wasluck, any closing comments?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to reflect on the conversations we've been having on the issue of PFAS and the importance of going upstream to address this issue. We've heard that from the MPCA. We've heard that from environmental organizations. The testimony, the printed documents also have support from the Partnership on Waste and Energy and the Minnesota Composting Council and the Minnesota Solid Waste Administrators Association. So this is a known problem across a variety of entities. They know that it's important that we stop putting PFAS into the environment in particular, but also for those of us concerned about the human health aspects, that we're stopping that piece as well. So it has broad support among a variety of organizations that are concerned with the environment and human health. And that's what I'm concerned with, and that's what a lot of committee members are concerned about. And so welcome folks to support this bill and our efforts in general to ban PFAS in these products so that we don't have them getting into the – we don't continue to see PFAS, more PFAS going in the environment and human bodies. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Wasluck renews her motion that House File 2952, as amended, be recommended – be re-referred to the Commerce, Finance, and Policy Committee. The clerk will take the roll.
Chair Hansen.
Aye.
Vice Chair Wasluck.
Aye.
Lead Heintzman.
No.
Representative Acomb.
Aye.
Representative Ackland.
Aye.
Representative Backer.
No.
Representative Becker Finn.
Aye.
Representative Eklund.
Aye.
Representative Fisher.
Fisher, aye.
Representative Green, excused. Representative Igo, excused. Representative Jordan.
Jordan, aye.
Representative Keeler.
Keeler, aye.
Representative Lee.
Lee, aye.
Representative Lippert.
Lippert, aye.
Representative Lewick, excused. Representative Morrison.
Morrison, aye.
Representative Nelson?
Nelson, no.
Representative Tice?
Tice, no.
The vote is 12 aye, 4 nay, and 3 excused.
The motion prevails. Members, just a little bit on the path ahead. We will have a meeting on Tuesday with several bills we're still working on. Next Thursday's agenda should be noted that we've passed a number of bills here. You know, I was contemplating the testimony and the discussion about blueprints and roadmaps on PFAS. And, you know, a blueprint or a roadmap can sit on the shelf for a very long time and be admired. But at some point, you have to start building the house. Or at some point, you have to get in the car or get on the bus, or get on the bike, and start down the road. Vice Chair Wasluck has taken the leadership to put together several bills here because the testimony previously was you're doing too much. You're building all the house at one time, or you're trying to get to your destination right away. So she has broke those bills apart, and presented us with things that we can do and has been rewarded with bipartisan strong votes leaving this committee. So thank you, Vice Chair Wasilek. We have more work to do. The road ahead is long, and there's a lot of house yet to build. With that, we are adjourned.